But suddenly, what Han had assumed was a heap of old rags stirred, and a talon-like hand shot out and grabbed his wrist.
Tell your fortune, masters!
The voice was shrill and squeaky, and he couldn't place the accent.
The descendant of Vima Sunrider has foreseen the future, good sirs. For a credit, she will tell you what lies ahead.
Let me go! Han tried to yank his hand free from the filthy claw, but the ancient woman's grip was surprisingly strong. He fumbled for a credit coin just to make her let go.
Vima, no beggar,
the old woman insisted indignantly.
She earns her credit, foresees the future. Yes, she does.
Han rolled his eyes and sighed. Go ahead, then, he snapped.
Ah, young captain,
she crooned.
So much lies before you. A long road. First, the smuggler road. Then the way of the warrior. Glory you will have, yes. But first you must face a terrible danger. Betrayal, yes. Betrayal from those you trust.
Her eyes fixed for a second on Mako, and the older man and Han exchanged exasperated glances.
Ah!
She cackled shrilly.
My young captain, yes. Wealth will come to you, but only after you no longer care about it.
Han burst out laughing. That'll be the day. Grandma, getting rich is all I care about.
Yes, that is true. Much will you do for money, but more will you do for love. Brave leader of many you will be. But beware the long, cold darkness like death. Only love shall free you to achieve the greatest glory. I see a dark-eyed woman, beautiful, of noble blood. She shall be yours.
That's it. I've had enough of this garbage, Han growled. Thanks for nothing, nutty old witch. Han hardly remembered climbing the rampway to Mako's flat. And when he awakened the next morning, he'd forgotten all about the old woman and her foretelling. Eric the Hutt was doing what he loved most in all the universe, totaling his profits. He was an old Hutt, approaching his 8th century, and he'd reached the corpulent stage that most Hutts achieved past middle age. Even the warnings of his personal physician about impending circulatory problems failed to make him exercise these days. Instead, he relied on his anti-gravity repulsor sled. With it, he could go anywhere. Eric's sled was top quality, the best money could buy. After all, why should the head of the Basadi Khajiitic, or clan, deny himself anything? But Eric was not one of those sybaritic Hutts who relished the pleasures of the flesh. True, he was a gourmet, and often a gourmand, but he didn't maintain entire palaces filled with slaves to cater to his slightest or most perverse whim, the way some Hutts did. The Dasilajic clan had always had a weakness for pleasures of the flesh. Eric had heard that Jiliak's nephew, Jabba, kept several female dancing humanoids of all things, on leashes, near him at all times. Jiliak's taste was better than Jabba's, but he enjoyed hedonistic excess just as much as his nephew.
And that is why we will prevail,
Eric thought.
The Basadi clan is willing to endure a bit of privation, if necessary, to gain our ends.
Eric knew it wouldn't be easy, though. Jiliak and Jabba were clever and ruthless, and their clan was as wealthy as his own. For years, the two richest and most powerful Hutt clans had contended with each other for the most lucrative ventures. Neither had eschewed methods such as assassination, kidnapping, and terrorism to gain their ends. Eric and his dead sibling, Zaval, had been the ones who'd thought of setting up colonies on Yalisha and using religious pilgrims as slave labor to process raw spice. The only thing they'd feared was a slave uprising, and it had been Eric who'd come up with the idea of the One, the All, and the Exaltation to tie it all together. Most Hutts knew of the Talanda Til ability to project warm, pleasurable emotions and sensations into the minds of most humanoid species. But it had taken Eric's quick thinking, his cleverness, to come up with the idea of the Exaltation as a mind-numbing reward for a day's hard labor in the spice factories. Once he'd realized how the Talanda Til ability could be utilized, it had been a simple matter for Eric to make up some doctrine, compose a few hymns, and write several chants and litanies. And that was all it took to produce a religion that credulous fools belonging to inferior species could embrace. Production in the factories was excellent, had been excellent all along. Only once, 5 years ago, had the Elysian Enterprise not turned a tidy profit. That was the year that wretched Corellian, Han Solo, had destroyed the Glitterstim factory. Eric studied one item on the Elysian colony's project budget, the sum of 7,500 credits to be handed over to the person or persons responsible for Han's live capture. Was it really necessary to pay extra for the live capture option? Eric had supervised many torture sessions coolly and efficiently, but unlike many of his people, he took no pleasure in tormenting sentients to gain his own ends. But Turuenza was a different story. The Talanda Til were a vengeful people, and it was obvious to Eric that the High Priest of Yalicia would not rest until he could personally supervise the long and exceedingly painful death of Han Solo. But did Eric want to pay extra just so Turuenza could be satisfied? Very well, he would authorize the payment of the bounty. Let Turuenza look forward to his fun. The anticipation made the High Priest happy, and happy underlings were productive underlings. Eric was a bit concerned about Turuenza, actually. The Talanda Til was definitely running the Elysian operation, no matter how much he and that idiot Kibik tried to disguise that fact. Eric frowned. Elysia was a hut operation. It wasn't proper for anyone other than a hut to give the orders there.
If only I dared send Durga, Eric thought. He has the will and the intelligence to rule Elysia properly, to remind Turuenza of just who his masters are.
Durga was Eric's only offspring. He was still a very young hut, barely past the age of legal responsibility and true self-awareness, only 100 standard years old. But he was smart, 10 times more intelligent and clever than Kibik. When Durga was born, all the other huts urged Eric to roll over on the helpless newborn, smothering him because of the dark birthmark that spread like a foul liquid from his forehead down over one eye and cheek. Ancient tales mentioned that such birthmarks were omens of disaster, and the elder huts predicted terrible things should Durga be allowed to survive. But Eric had looked down at his tiny, squirming offspring and sensed that his child would grow up to be a worthy hut. So he had taken young Durga up into his arms and solemnly pronounced that here was his offspring and heir, and warned the naysayers to be silent. Eric's greatest dream was to someday expand their spice processing and slaving operation to a second world in the Elysian system. He knew he probably wouldn't live to see two worlds producing at full capacity, but Durga definitely would. There was only one problem, and that was the Dasilajic clan. Eric knew only too well how much Jabba and Jiliak would give to destroy them all and take over the Elysian operation. Still, it was but a sign of the Basadi clan's extraordinary success and accomplishment that they be so envied. Hut life was full of move and countermove. That was the way of it, and frankly, Eric thrived on the intrigue, the danger. He wouldn't have changed things even if he could. 5 months and 6 bounty hunters later, Han and Chewbacca had settled down into life on Nar Shadda. During his first month, Han filled in as a shift pilot on the Nar Shadda to Nalhutta shuttle, ferrying Huts and their underlings back and forth from the Smuggler's Moon to the Hut homeworld. Han hung on to the referral Tagta had given him, but decided he'd better learn his way around before he applied for jobs piloting for the Hut Lords. They were tough masters to please. Just about the time Han's temporary job ended, he met up with an old acquaintance of Mako's, a craggy-faced, aging smuggler named Zine Offit. Zine was heading off to Smuggler's Run with a shipment, and when he mentioned that he'd like company, Han and Chewbacca offered to ride along. Smuggler's Run was a hideout for sentients on the Lam who were even hotter than the denizens of Nar Shadda. The run was a series of hideouts, actually, artificial environments whittled out of several large asteroids located in the middle of a huge asteroid field. The main one was a smelly hole bored into a large asteroid that was known as Skip 1. Zine Offit showed Han the way into the run, through the treacherous, constantly changing asteroid field, though he wouldn't let him pilot.
Next time, kid, he promised in his breathless, wheezy voice. I promise you, this time, just watch old Uncle Zine and enjoy the ride.
When they reached Skip One, Han and Chewbacca warily followed Zeen Offutt to meet the gang, as he called his friends. Han was introduced to a sallow, thin man with scars on his face, named Gerald, and another older man with a receding hairline who incongruously went by the name Kid Dexelin. As he and Zeen headed for the bar, Han's attention was caught and held by a beautiful woman with long black hair who definitely stood out in the mix of unsavory smuggler types.
Han, I'd like you to meet a friend of mine, Zeen said, indicating the woman. Sinuiana Blue, one of the top smugglers around. She also runs a wicked sabacc table. Blue, meet Han Solo, a new kid I brought along for the ride. And this is his pal, Chewie.
Pleased to meet you, the smuggler said in a voice that couldn't help being sultry. So, Han said, may I buy you a drink, Blue? She glanced at him, seemed to consider, then smiled faintly. No, I don't think so, she said. You're cute, but not my type, Solo. I like them a bit more seasoned. Zeen snickered.
Our Blue is one of a kind. She...
He broke off and whirled as a loud roar reverberated through the bar. Han spun on his heel to find a Wookiee standing in the doorway. She was big for a Wookiee female, as tall and muscular as Chewie.
Who's that?
Han asked Zeen.
Winnie,
the senior smuggler replied with a wink and a leer. The Wookiee growled a throaty greeting at Chewie, totally ignoring his human companion. Then she reached out one hairy paw and ran it admiringly down Chewbacca's long arm. Han turned to Zeen. I think she likes him, he said dryly, in basic.
Looks like,
Zeen agreed. Chewbacca looked around wildly as the female Wookiee pressed up close to him, growling suggestively. Catching Han's eye, Chewie shook his head in a slight but emphatic movement. Han took pity on his friend. Hey, Chewie! He said loudly. We gotta go. Winnie plainly didn't believe him. She growled low in her throat. Han realized that they were drawing a crowd. Kid Dexelin, Zeen's balding friend, stepped forward.
It ain't polite to accuse people of lying, Winnie. Han here is telling the truth. I just signed him and his Wookiee pal on to ride as co-pilot and gunner to Kessel aboard the Starfire. Matter of fact, my droid should be finished loading our cargo by now, Solo. Let's go, kid.
Han smiled sweetly at Winnie and shrugged with a what-can-you-do expression. Chewbacca didn't bother trying to hide how glad he was to get away from the predatory female. As they headed up the corridor toward Skip One's landing bay, Han gave the kid a grateful smile. Thanks, he said. For a while, it looked like I wasn't going to be able to get us out of there. Kid Dexelin grinned.
Yeah, upsetting a love-struck Wookiee ain't exactly a smart thing to do. So what do you want to do now? You actually up for going on to Kessel with me?
Sure, Han said. I've always wanted to go to Kessel. When they got to Kessel, Kid Dexelin made it clear that he was bound for parts he preferred to remain unknown, at least to Han. The older man was sure Han could catch a ride back to Smuggler's Run or to Nar Shadda. Han glanced around the cantina, and his eyes widened as he beheld a familiar face.
Roa!
He exclaimed. Roa and Mako were old friends, and he had been one of the first pals Mako had introduced Han to when he'd arrived on Nar Shadda.
I'm looking for a ride back to Nar Shadda. Any chance we can catch one with you?
The older man smiled.
Sure, Han. Only trouble is we're not going directly back. I've got a load of spice to take on to Merkur. How does Nar Shadda, by way of the Kessel Run, strike you?
Han's eyes lit up.
That would be great. I can't really get the top piloting assignments until I've got a run or two under my belt. Hey, Roa, any chance you'd let me pilot and coach me through it?
The older man grinned.
Depends, Solo.
On what?
How many drinks you buy me.
Han chuckled and waved to the bar droid for fresh ammunition.
Tell me about the run, he said. I think I'm ready.
As Roa explained it, the Kessel Run took ships traveling in real space from the Kessel sector past and around a collection of black holes known as the Maw, then through a rough asteroid field called the Pit. The Pit wasn't as hard to navigate as the Maw, but more ships had actually been lost there than near the Maw because, after successfully making it past the black hole cluster, pilots tended to be tired, their reflexes slowed, and just when they needed to rest, the Pit was waiting for them. Roa explained all of this to Han, then took him back to the Wayfarer and showed him a complete schematic of their course from the Navicomputer. Han studied it all intently, then nodded. Okay, I think I can handle it, Roa. The Wayfarer's captain gave him a long, measuring glance, then nodded.
Okay, son. Go ahead. Take us out.
Han nodded. Then his world narrowed into the view screen, his coordinates, his controls, and his hands and eyes. Flying past the center of the maw, Han was acutely conscious that the slightest mistake on his part could result in disaster for the Wayfarer. He tried to take a deep breath as they sped past a whirl of bluish gas and dust, but it was as though a Durasteel band were tightening around his chest. Nearly an hour later, when Han felt as though he hadn't drawn a deep breath for the whole trip, they were out of the maw and entering the pit. An asteroid whizzed by. Roa's voice was sharp. Hard to port! Han caught barely a glimpse of the onrushing asteroid the size of a mountain. His sweaty hand found the control to implement Roa's order and slipped. Panic erupted in Han's chest as he clamped slick fingers onto the controls, overcompensating and causing them to nearly skid into the path of yet another asteroid. Chewbacca howled and Roa cursed. Han managed to miss the chunk of rock by the skin of his teeth. Without another word, Roa reached into a storage bin and pulled out a pair of non-slip pilot gloves.
Here, my present for making it past the maw. I'll take over while you put them on. Thanks, Roa.
Several hours later, when they were relaxing in the relative safety of hyperspace, Roa leaned back in the co-pilot's seat.
So, he said, I have to say, I've never seen anyone fly the run any smoother on the first try.
Han grinned at his friend.
So, what are you going to do now? Roa asked.
Han had been thinking about that. I want a ship of our own for me and Chewie. So when I get back to Narshada, I'm going where the credits are. Roa's eyebrows went up.
The Huts? Displease them and you can end up swimming through vacuum without a suit.
Han nodded. But to make the big money, you gotta be willing to take those risks. 2 weeks and yet another bounty hunter later, Han and Chewbacca walked up to the largest building in the Hut section of Narshada. Once a luxury hotel, the Jewel was now headquarters to the Dasilajic Kajitic. Han was a little nervous, wondering whether Gilliak the Hut would recognize him as one of the messengers who 5 years ago had delivered a threatening message from Gilliak's arch-rival, Zaval. Gilliak had flown into a rage and wrecked a large portion of his audience hall. Han consoled himself that he was no longer 19 years old. He looked different. Older. Han was surprised to see two Huts in the room. He was pretty sure that Gilliak was the larger of the two. He bowed deeply. Lord Gilliak, he said in basic, it is a privilege to meet you, Your Excellency. Your cousin Lord Tagta says that you are always in need of good pilots. Han glanced over at the younger, smaller Hut. He was about Han's height and only about 4 or 5 meters long. Gilliak noticed Han looking at his companion.
Captain Solo, this is my nephew, Jabba. He has become indispensable to me in running the Dasilajic Kajitic.
Han bowed to the younger Hut. Greetings, Your Excellency. Gilliak held out his hand.
Enough chit-chat. Tagta's holocube, Captain.
Han handed it to Gilliak. The Hut Lord examined the holocube for several minutes.
You come highly recommended, Captain. We shall be in touch.
During the next 3 months, Han flew many missions for the Huts. One day, Han and Chewie were called upon to pilot Jabba's personal yacht, the Star Jewel, to transport Jabba and a pet he'd recently acquired to his palace on Tatooine. The thing was a nightmare, slashing claws, a huge sucker-like mouth, and an insatiable appetite. The yacht was a big ship, a Ubrickian cruiser. It was fast, well-shielded, and heavily armed with quad laser cannons and a gunnery crew. Tatooine was a remote world, back of beyond, and Han had to make several hyperspace jumps to reach it. His next-to-last jump put him into a little-traveled space lane, but it was the most direct route to Tatooine. That's where the pirate ships were waiting for them. Four Drell teardrop-shaped vessels, sleek and shining, small but deadly. Han had faced their like before when he'd been piloting for the Elysians. The moment he saw them, his mental alarm bells went off.
Pirates? They could be. Better to be safe than sorry.
Chewie, shields on maximum, Han snapped, sending the yacht into an evasive maneuvering pattern while his co-pilot adjusted their deflectors to maximum strength. Han flipped on the comm unit. Attention, gunnery crew, stand ready. We may be seeing some action. Even as the words left his mouth, the closest ship spat a salvo of quad laser fire at them. Han dodged an incoming Drell ship, saw the turbo lasers fire a vicious burst at the oncoming vessel, but at the last moment, it dodged the fire. Blasted little ships are too fast! Jabba was hollering over the comm, demanding an explanation. Totoplat, Jabba's cook, was fussing that Jabba's dinner was ruined, just ruined. With a muttered curse, Han spared a half a second to close the comm channel from the passenger section. When he looked back up, he paled. Incoming amidships, Chewie, he yelled, knowing this time he couldn't evade fast enough. The Star Jewel shuddered violently. Han realized the first ship had swung around and was now firing on their stern. He cursed when he saw that his rear deflectors were nearly gone. Chewie, I'm coming about. Compensate for that shield. Activating the comm, Han shouted to the gunners, I'm coming about. Hard to port. You guys get that blasted pirate off my rear. The Wookiee snarled as he worked frantically on the shields. Han sent the Star Jewel into a hard port turn, then a second later he felt the faint jolts as the gunners fired. Another miss! Han cursed and activated the comm. Listen up, you guys. I want portside gunner 1 to target the following coordinates and fire on my order. Han checked his XY coordinate grids, made a rapid calculation, and spat out a string of coordinates. Gunner 2, target the following coordinates and fire your burst 5 seconds after gunner 1. Got that? Han reeled off another string of coordinates. Gunner 3, target the following coordinates and fire your weapon 5 seconds after Gunner 1. Okay, Gunner 1, prepare to fire! What Han was attempting was a military technique called a limited barrage pattern. It was designed to make a ship dodge a burst of fire, only to run right into another blast. Tricky, but if they could get the timing right. Han counted seconds in his head as he angled his stern slightly toward the Drell, offering the most tempting target he could. 3, 2, 1! Portside Gunner 1, fire! The deadly beam shot out, but as Han had figured, the agile Drell vessel evaded the blast. 4, 3, 2, 1! Han counted, watching the portside viewscreen. Yes! He shouted as the evading ship ran straight into the blast from portside gun 2. Incandescent white fire blossomed against the blackness. You got him! Cheers erupted from the comm unit. Han sent the Star Jewel hurtling towards the two remaining Drell ships. He spoke into the comm. Starboard gunners, prepare to fire continuous bursts on my order. Coordinates are... He glanced at his board and then gave them a string of numbers. He watched as the two Drell ships came about for another attack run, then began hurtling towards the yacht at full speed. Starboard gunners, fire at maximum. Now! The three powerful turbo lasers blasted away into empty space. Those captains are gonna think I've lost my mind, Han thought, as he counted the bursts from his starboard battery, mentally timing their pounding rhythm. What he was planning required pinpoint timing. As the Drells reached firing range, Han wrenched his controls, rolling the big ship to port, turning it up on its side. Drell pirates scattered wildly, trying to evade the bursts from the turbo lasers that were now aiming directly at them. This time, the Star Jewel was close enough to the explosion to lose a starboard deflector when it was repeatedly pummeled by wreckage. Han watched the indicators on his instruments leap as the Hutt yacht sheared through the zone of destruction, then out the other side. By the time he remembered to flick the comm unit back on, Jabba's threats and imprecations had died away. Han cleared his throat. We're okay, Your Excellency. Hope I didn't jounce you around too much back there.
My precious cargo is upset,
Jabba grumbled.
I may have to sacrifice one of my dancers to appease his appetite. Blood eaters are sensitive creatures, Solo.
Yes, sir. Sorry about that, sir, but I had to fight. Otherwise, we'd have been blown out of space.
Those pirates weren't just looking for loot and salvage, Your Excellency. They knew we were coming. I believe they were after you, sir.
Another assassination attempt.
Jabba sounded very thoughtful. Han knew that devious mind was working at light speed.
I think so, sir.
Interesting.
Jabba grunted.
Captain, may I ask where you learned those unorthodox maneuvers?
At the Imperial Academy, Your Excellency.
I see. They proved most useful, I must admit. You are to be doubly commended for foiling this cowardly attempt to murder me, Captain Solo. Remind me of that when we return to Nar Shadda.
You bet, Han promised.
Solo knows something,
Jabba the Hutt said to his uncle Jilliak 2 weeks later.
Ship's log showed he was tracking with his weapon systems and taking evasive maneuvers even before the Drell ships fired on us. How did Solo know they meant trouble?
The question we must ask is, who was behind the attack?
Jilliak asked.
Basadi,
Jabba replied flatly. Jilliak cursed.
Naturally. They're the only ones who have sufficient funds to hire the Drell pirates.
Blast them!
The Hutt Lord's massive tail whipped back and forth on the polished floor.
We need more information. Then we can plan our retaliation.
It was several hours before Solo appeared, and Jabba didn't mince words.
I've reviewed the Star Jewel's log, Captain. How did you know the Drell pirates were waiting to attack us?
Jabba's eyesight was sharp. The Hutts could see farther into the infrared than humans. He watched the blood ebb from Solo's face as he paled, though his expression did not change. The Wookiee shifted uneasily and whined softly. Solo hesitated, then drew a deep breath. I've run into ambush from pirates and Drell-built cruisers before, he said. Jilliak was staring hard at the young Corellian.
When did you encounter such an ambush, Captain?
He asked slowly. 5 years ago, Your Excellency. Jabba leaned forward.
And who were you working for when you encountered them, Solo?
The Corellian smuggler hesitated, then said quietly, I was working for Zaval, sir, on Yalisha. Jilliak's eyes widened.
Yes, my memory is stirring. Was it you that brought me a snakequarium? I remember the Solistan, but it's so hard to differentiate between humans.
Yes, sir. That was me.
Why didn't you tell us this before?
Jilliak asked, his voice as cold as a Hothan glacier.
What are you hiding, Captain?
Nothing, Solo protested, shaking his head. I wanted to work for you, but I thought you wouldn't like it if you knew I'd worked for the Basadi clan, even just piloting spice freighters. So I didn't mention it, that's all. Jilliak considered for a moment.
Are you still working for them?
No, Your Excellency, Solo said. I left Yalisha 5 years ago, and I never want to go back.
Captain,
Jilliak said,
we were told that a human, one Vic Drago, was single-handedly responsible for the conflict on Yalisha. We were also told that Vic Drago was reported killed by bounty hunters soon afterwards. What do you know of all this?
Solo shifted, and now Jabba could tell he was struggling to make a decision. Finally, he nodded. I know a lot about it, he admitted. I'm Vic Drago. Jabba and Jilliak exchanged a long look.
So?
Jilliak was all business.
You worked for Basadi, Captain Solo. What can you tell us about them?
Well, Tirowenza reports to his Hutt overlord the way he did to Zaval when I was there, Solo said. But he's the one who makes the decisions.
How did Zaval really die?
The ceiling collapsed on him, Solo said. While we were raiding Tirowenza's treasure room, we got caught and... Jabba's eyes narrowed.
Treasure room? What treasure?
Tirowenza's a really single-minded collector of rare things, Han explained. He lives for his collection.
I see,
Jilliak said thoughtfully with a sideways glance at Jabba. Finally, Jilliak dismissed the Corellian, And Solo and the Wookiee turned and left the audience chamber.
So, Uncle,
Jabba said,
what are you thinking?
I'm thinking that all this enmity between Bisadi and Acilogic must cease. Sooner or later, one of their attempts against us will succeed, and that would be a tragedy.
I agree, Jabba said.
I believe we should call for an inter-clan meeting to be held on neutral ground,
Diliac said,
and that we should offer a non-violent pact to Bisadi.
Jabba knew there had to be more to it than that.
What is behind this request?
He asked slowly.
My agenda for this meeting will include a request for up-to-date profit disclosure on both sides, Diliac said.
And you think Bisadi will share their information with us?
I believe they will, nephew. Arrak will enjoy the chance to flaunt their profit margins before Acilogic.
Jabba nodded.
You are correct.
I believe that he will take this chance to bring in the leadership of Yalicia in order to validate their figures. My guess is that the true leader of Yalicia will also be summoned to report.
Jabba's eyes widened, then narrowed at the thought. He chuckled aloud.
I begin to see your drift, Uncle.
Terowinza was relaxing in his sling when the most famous bounty hunter in the Empire arrived to see him.
Greetings, Master Fett,
Terowinza boomed.
Let's not waste time,
Boba Fett said, his voice flat and inhuman as it came through his helmet speaker. His body was covered in greenish-gray Mandalorian armor.
What is it you wish, priest?
Terowinza pulled himself together.
There is a smuggler, Han Solo by name. You may have seen wanted posters for him.
Fett nodded once.
I want him. Alive and relatively unharmed. No disintegrations.
That makes it harder,
Fett said.
For 7,500 credits, it's not worth my time.
Yalicia will increase the bounty on Solo to 20,000 credits,
Terowinza said.
You'll have Solo,
Fett promised.
Just wait, Solo, Terowinza thought. You are a dead man. You just don't know it yet.
Always ready for entertainment and intrigued by novelty, Han was attracted one day by a huge holo sign on the Chance Castle, one of the hotel casinos on Nal Shada. Headlining was a stage magician who was, by all reports, one of the best illusionists in the galaxy. Zavri proved to be a voluptuous, attractive woman several years older than Han. She performed all the traditional illusions and then improved on them. She lasered a volunteer from the audience in half, then lasered herself in two. She teleported not only herself, but a small flock of Rodian batwings from one glassine cage to another one across the stage, all in one burst of smoke and flame. Her illusions were stylish and imaginative, and so well done, it appeared she really possessed supernatural powers. For the grand finale of her act, Zavri made the entire wall of the hotel ballroom disappear, replaced with the star-flecked blackness of space. As the audience oohed and aahed, suddenly the emptiness of space was filled with a terrifying vision of a rogue dwarf star rushing headlong at them.
Whoa!
Han couldn't stop himself from crying out and ducking as the enormous illusion dominated the room. Chewie howled in terror and nearly crawled under his seat. It was all Han could do to drag him back upright when the illusion abruptly vanished, and there, replacing it, was a huge image of Zavri, bowing and smiling. After all the applause had died away, Han made sure that he found his way backstage. He deliberately hung back until everyone except her assistant, a surly Rodian, was gone. Finally, he stepped forward, smiling his best, most charming smile. Hi, he said, looking Zavri in the eye. She was nearly as tall as he was, and her high-heeled, elaborately decorated boots made them the same height. Han Solo, Lady Zavri, and my partner, Chewbacca. I wanted to tell you that I thought that was the most original and exciting magic act I've ever seen. Zavory looked him and Chewbacca up and down assessingly, then smiled. A very different sort of smile, cold and cynical.
Greetings, Solo. Let me guess, she said. You're selling something?
Han shook his head.
Very perceptive of her. But it's been a long time since I've been a con man. These days I'm just a pilot.
Not at all, lady. I'm just a fan who admires stage magic. Also, I wanted to give Chewie a chance to see you and smell you so he'll know you're as human as I am. I'm afraid you more than impressed him. He didn't know whether to dig a hole in the floor or fight for his life. She glanced up at Chewbacca, then slowly, slowly, her cynical smile faded to be replaced by the real thing.
Pleased to meet you, Chewbacca. Sorry if I scared you, she said, holding out her hand.
Chewie engulfed her hand in his two hairy paws and spouted Wookiee at her, which she seemed to understand perfectly. He told her that her show had amazed and terrified him, but that now it was over, he found that he'd really enjoyed himself.
Why, thank you, she exclaimed. That's the reaction a magician hopes to get.
Han was almost jealous to see how she and the Wookiee seemed to hit it off. Zavory responded to Chewie's open admiration with genuine warmth. Before the moment could be lost, Han stepped forward and invited the illusionist to go out with them for a post-performance snack. She eyed him, the caution back in her eyes. Han studied her and suddenly realized that this was a human who had suffered a terrible loss in the past. It made her cautious, protective.
She'll say no, he thought, disappointed.
But to his surprise, after a moment's consideration, Zavory agreed to accompany them. Han was back at the stage door the next night and the next. He and Zavory got to know each other little by cautious little. By listening and asking roundabout questions, Han managed to discover a few things about her. She was proud of her skills as a magician and couldn't resist a challenge. She hated the Empire with a single-minded ferocity. They had killed her family and revenge was her religion. And she was lonely. The third night he spent time with her, Zavory gave him a quick kiss at the door to her room before vanishing inside. Han went home smiling. When he got ready to go out late the next night, Chewbacca rose to accompany him. Han held up a warning hand to the Wookiee. Chewie, old buddy, you don't have to come with me tonight. Chewbacca made a derisive sound. Han would get into trouble without him. He just knew it. Han smiled a slow, irresistible smile. Yep, that's what I'm hoping, pal. I'm going alone tonight. See you later. Much later, I hope. When he waited outside the door this night, Zavory emerged looking pleased to see him, but glanced around, obviously searching for Chewbacca.
Where's Chewie?
Han took her arm. He stayed home. Tonight it's just you and me, if that's okay. She tried to look stern, then suddenly she smiled at him knowingly.
Solo, you're a rogue, you know that?
He smiled back. I'm glad you noticed. That means I'm your kind of guy, right? She shook her head.
You never know.
When they reached her room, Zavory pressed the door lock with her forefinger and thumb, and it opened silently. She hesitated for a second, then walked in, leaving the door open. Han smiled and followed her. He left just after sunrise, walking through uncrowded streets, hearing the early morning vendors crying their wares aloud. Without warning, something jabbed him in the right buttock. Steely fingers clamped onto his arm and dragged him into an alley. Han realized with horror that he couldn't fight back.
Drugged. Oh, no.
After relieving Han of his blaster, his captor walked around him, and Han finally got a look at him. He wore full-body Mandalorian armor.
Don't waste your energy, Solo. I jabbed you with a dose of a handy little potion they've come up with on Ryloth. You won't be able to move for several hours except at my command. By the time you can move under your own power, we'll be aboard my ship and halfway to Elysia. Now walk. Turn right at the mouth of the alley.
Soon they were walking down the aisle between two huge Derosian-built freighters. In just a few steps, they'd be at the bounty hunter's ship, and that would be it. As Han marched woodenly forward, he caught a blur of motion out of the corner of his eye. A figure stepped out from behind a freighter's massive stabilizer fin, and an authoritative voice said,
"Freeze, bounty hunter! Move and you've had it!"
The hand that had been resting lightly on Han's arm fell away. The Corellian, of course, was unable to stop walking. Relief washed through him. I'm saved. Only to be replaced with terror. There was an air shaft between him and the ship. Unable to stop himself, he was going to walk right off the edge. Then the voice called after him. Hey, you, Solo, stop! Han felt himself halting, and was again flooded with relief. Fortunately, his body would obey orders from anyone, not just the unknown bounty hunter. Turn around and come back here, the voice added. Joyfully, Han obeyed. As he walked back into the shadow of the freighter's stabilizer fin, Han got a good look at his rescuer. He was a human male, approximately Han's age, maybe a couple of years older. Slightly shorter than Han himself, he was slender and fit. He was clean-shaven, with curling black hair, dark eyes, and skin the color of vine coffee lightened with Tralodon milk. As Han approached him, he smiled, an exceptionally charming smile. You may stop now, Solo, he said, halting Han well out of range of his erstwhile captor. Han stopped and stood watching as his rescuer's thumb moved on the firing control of the blaster. The stun blast hit the bounty hunter, and at such close range, even his Mandalorian armor couldn't deflect its effects. Han's rescuer gestured, "Help me pick him up." Together, he and the newcomer carried the unconscious hunter towards his ship. Han wondered what they were going to do with him. It wouldn't be long before he regained consciousness. When they reached the ramp leading to the airlock of the bounty hunter's ship, they laid the bounty hunter on the permacrete. The newcomer then proceeded to search his pockets and all the concealed places in his armor. Hello, what have we here? He exclaimed as his deft fingers encountered several vials in the bounty hunter's belt pocket. After holding each vial up to the light so he could read the label, Han's rescuer flashed him a roguish grin. You're in luck, Solo, he said. This is the stuff he shot into you. He held up a blue vial. And here's the antidote. He held up a green vial. Han waited impatiently as the newcomer loaded the injector with the substance. He felt himself tingle all over. Moments later, he could move and speak. Pal, I owe you, Han said, extending his hand to the other. If it hadn't been for you, he shook his head. So who are you, and why did you rescue me? I've never seen you before. The other grinned. Lando Calrissian, he replied. And as to why I saved you, it's a bit of a story. Right now we have to figure out what we're going to do with Boba Fett here. Han felt dizzy.
Boba Fett? This is Boba Fett?
The most famous bounty hunter in the galaxy had been hired to bring him in? Han felt himself tremble in reaction to the news. Calrissian was already loading the injector again, this time with the other vial, the blue one. Boba Fett lay quiet as Calrissian shoved the injector against his neck and triggered it. Moments later, Fett shivered. Lie still, Calrissian ordered. The bounty hunter obeyed. So now, what do we do with him? Han asked. I think we set his autopilot to blast out of here and set a course for some far system. Then we order him not to interfere with the course we've set. If this stuff takes hours to wear off, by the time it does, he could be sectors away. Calrissian paused. He's killed so many people, I'm almost tempted to just shoot him. But I've never killed anyone in cold blood like that. He frowned, almost seeming embarrassed. I'm not eager to start now, I have to admit. Me too, Han said. Your plan sounds fine. Let's get him aboard. Obediently, Boba Fett opened up his ship, and the three of them walked into Slave One. Han and Lando strapped Fett into one of the passenger seats. Are you a pilot? Han asked Calrissian. No, I'm not, he admitted. Matter of fact, that's why I was looking for you. I need to hire a pilot. You got one, Han said. Anything I can do to help you out. Like I said, I owe you, pal. We'll talk about that later. Let's get rid of our friend here. Together, the young men jogged to a safe distance. They turned back to watch Slave One rear up on its end, then take off, its powerful engines flaring. Only when it had disappeared into the distance did Han finally draw a long, deep breath and let it out slowly.